The children turned and saw a spinach green boat coming towards them. "No, it's the carters," said Maya. She looked round desperately for somewhere to hide. "If I ran off into the jungle, perhaps." But it wasn't the carters. In a way, it was worse, because from the woman who now rose from her seat in the stern, she would not have tried to hide or run away. "You're mad," shouted Miss Minton across the narrowing gaps of the boat. "You're completely mad, Maya. What do you mean by all this?" Then she disappeared into the cabin where, for the first time since Maya had been lost in the fire, she burst into tears. But the relief of seeing Maya safe soon took a different turn. On board the Arabella, she complained about Maya's tangled hair, her bare feet, her strange clothes. She had brought a toothbrush, even a hairbrush, but as she said, it would take days to get Maya's hair and to make her look civilised again. She berated Finn for taking Maya off. She inquired nastily about his Latin, and she wanted to know how often they took the quinine pills. By the time she had finished nagging and finding fault, Maya was almost ready to wish that Minty had deserted her. Later the children went over to have supper on the carter's launch. The professor, who turned out to be an enthusiastic cook, had opened a tin of corned beef and made a splendid hash with wild onions and peppers. Finn, who had always admired the professor, had brought over some specimens for him to identify, and it was now they heard what had happened to the carters. "It's rather an amazing story," said Miss Minton. "Lady Parsons actually cabled and offered them a home. You can imagine how pleased the twins were, going off to live with a proper lady." Maya was surprised. She always seemed such a fierce person in the paintings, that square face and her choker of pearls. "Well, she's certainly done her duty," said Miss Minton. "They sailed just before we came away." "Did Mr. Carter go too?" Finn asked. Miss Minton shook her head. "He had to stay in hospital for a while. He's probably not sorry, because what faces him when he comes out will not be pleasant." And she explained about the trial and what would happen if he was found guilty. But soon the talk turned to the Kaminskis. "I'm sorry you never got my note that night," said Minty. "I was arranging for us to go and live with them. You'd like that, won't you?" she said to Maya. Maya was silent, looking down at her plate. "Of course she will," jeered Finn. "Sergey will be able to kneel at her feet like the persons in a book." Miss Minton quelled him with a look. "The Kaminskis have been kindness themselves. They've been preparing a room for Maya at the top of the house with a view of the river." But Maya did not want to look at the river. She wanted to be on it. The grand house with rich food, the Russian babble meant nothing to her now. She wanted to be with Finn and she wanted to be free. "Do I have to go back?" she asked quietly. "Yes, first thing tomorrow morning," said Miss Minton. "Bring your belongings as soon as you have washed." Knowing it was her last night on the Arabella, Maya fought against the sleep. She must remember it all, the lapping of the water against the side of the boat, the white moths and the fireflies. Finn too was awake. "When we're grown up, I'll come back for you, I promise, and then no one can stop us." But she wasn't a grown up now, and nor was he, and Finn was going on alone. The professor had tried to persuade him to come back with them, but Finn said no. "I promised my father I'd go find the Zanti, and I'll keep my promise." Now, though, lying in the dark, he realised how much he hated the idea of going on by himself. He wasn't afraid exactly. He knew he could do it, but it suddenly seemed utterly dismal to go on without his friend. "We could still run away into the forest," said Maya. But Finn said no. "Miss Minty really cares about you. The professor told me she nearly went mad when she thought you'd been killed in the fire. You can't play tricks on her or on him. They're good people. It's just, why can't grown-ups understand that we might know what is right for us?" The children slept at last, but on the boat without a name, Miss Minton lay awake. After a while, she got up and went out onto the deck. Everything had turned out the way she had hoped. She had found Maya, and Maya was safe and well. Not only safe and well, but happy. At least she had been. Finn too. They'd kept the boat tidy, labelled their specimens properly, taken their quinine. Bernard would have been really proud of his son. So, why did she feel so uncomfortable? Behind her, the professor stirred in his sleep. "You awake?" she asked him. He opened his eyes. "I am now," he said. "I need to talk to you," Miss Minton said. "I'll go make some tea." The children slept late and washed and dressed almost in silence, both of them too afraid to speak. Maya packed her belongings in an old canvas bag and stroked the dog. "I'll come over in a minute and say goodbye," said Finn. The carter's boat was ready to leave, breakfast tidied away, ropes coiled. The professor was riddling the firebox and feeding the fresh logs. Miss Minton, sitting in the stern, had a parcel wrapped in sacking on her knees. "I'm ready," said Miss Minton, trying to keep her voice steady. She mustn't cry. Above all, she mustn't sulk. "Finn's coming over to say goodbye." "No need," said Miss Minton. "He'd like to." "All the same, there's no need." Maya looked at her governess. Miss Minton seemed different, softer, rounder, more at peace. "Why?" she asked. "Why is there no need?" "Because we're coming with you. We're going on, so get on the Arabella, tell Finn, we'll follow three lengths behind." Maya turned to go, hardly believing that there could be such happiness. Then she heard a loud splash. Miss Minton was leaning over the side, watching the parcel she had on her knee floating down the river. "What's that?" asked Maya. Miss Minton straightened herself. "If you must know," she said, "it was my corset."